Eddie, the collegiate senior. Chapter 4. The indoor track season. The day of the divisional meet arrives. The team arrives early, since it is mandatory that everyone goes through a security checkpoint since the president is present today. Settling in at the team's bench, the team has more time than usual before the meet begins. Kathy and Paula, who have floor passes today, are granted a front row seat to today's activities. Angela Meadows has been briefed ahead of time by Provost Layton of which events are key. With the television station's equipment all set up, Angela is ready to broadcast selected events of the meet. As they are waiting, Mark scans the stands, looking for anyone he might know. Eddie asks, "Do you see anyone?" Mark replies, "Johnson and Barbara are here. Your parents are sitting with my parents and Kathy's mom. Kathy's father is sitting with the other administrators. And the mayor is here. He's in section 107 again, where he was last year." Eddie comments, "Jackson Finley and his henchmen are supposed to be here today too." Braden walks up, takes a seat with Eddie and Mark, and mentions, "McCrutchen is in the stands. I wonder how he's got through security." Mark comments, "McCrutchen is awake and unconscious at the same time." Braden laughs, asking Eddie and Mark, "Did I ever tell you guys what McCrutchen was saying when he was locked up in the campus jail last fall?" Eddie replies, "I don't think so." "What did he say?" Laughing again, Braden tells them, "McCrutchen was chanting." Mark and No Johnson, Eddie is ahead. Mark with the Johnson, Eddie got no head. Eddie replies, "That guy is such a moron. McCrutchen is in a walking coma. Why McCrutchen is in the stands today is anyone's guess." Walking up to Mr. Fraser, the undercover officer playing the part of Jackson Finley mentions, "It seems that Mayor Jameson, as expected, is at the meet today. He's in section 107. We'll have to put on a good show for him." Mr. Fraser nods his head, showing Mr. Finley a piece of paper on his clipboard. Mr. Finley points to a specific line on the paper and points to another team's bench, knowing that, sooner or later, the mayor will see the collaboration. Mr. Finley then makes himself scarce for a while, meeting in a private area with the other undercover officers. Walking over to Bobby B, Mr. Fraser tells the shot doc, "I need a favor." Bobby B asks, "What's that?" Mr. Fraser replies, "Nothing big. I just need you to break the world record in the shot put today." Pointing to the stands where the president is just being seated, Mr. Fraser tells Bobby B, "As you know, the president is here today. We need to show him a thing or two." After reviewing the statistics, Dr. Owens and Dr. Zunde believe you're the most likely one to break a record here today. So, I'm counting on you. Suddenly fired up, Bobby B exclaims, "You got it. I'm going to give it more than my best." Mr. Fraser gives Bobby B a pat on the back, telling him, "Good. Make Dr. Zunde proud." The call is made for the first event, which is the men's 60-meter dash preliminaries. Mr. Fraser tells Eddie, Mark, and Hoffer, "You guys will sweep this event. No one will even come close to you. Remember, the president is in the stands. Show him what we do." All of the contestants in this event head to the starting line, where the meet officials line them up according to their heat. Arriving at the starting line, Mark catches the eye of Alan Madison, who previously gave Mark the impression that he is someone special. Madison, seeing Mark warming up, announces, "I've been training." Mark replies, "It's about time." Madison, getting a little hot under the collar, asks, "What's that supposed to mean?" Mark replies, "Last year, it looked like the first time you ever ran." Repeatedly pointing to his chest with his index finger, Madison tells Mark, "Hey, I'm Alan Madison." Mark turns toward Eddie, telling him, "Oh, wonderful. Not another one of those." Madison tells Mark, "Hey, I don't take this shit from nobody." Mark replies, "So, shut up then." Eddie points out to Mark that was a double negative. It means that he takes shit from everyone. Hearing Eddie's remark, Madison is now sorely ticked off. With the first heat ready, the starter announces, "On your marks," followed by, "Set." The buzzer sounds, and the first heat of the 60-meter dash preliminaries are underway. Immediately, right out of the blocks, Eddie claims the lead. Throughout the race, Mark maintains second place, with Hoffer in third place. At the finish line, Eddie crosses first, winning this heat. He is followed by Mark and Hoffer. Madison, with a less than impressive showing, finishes in fifth place in this heat. Eddie, Mark, and Hoffer walk back to their team's bench. Madison stands just beyond the finish line with his hands on his hips, wondering what just happened. Arriving at the bench, Mr. Fraser asks Eddie, "Did you give it a 100% effort?" Eddie replies, "No." Mr. Fraser tells Eddie, "You ran a 6.55, which is 3/100ths of a second off the record." Eddie confidently replies, "Then, I'll break the record in the final." Stirring up some internal competition, Mr. Fraser smiles and replies, "Good. We can't have Bobby B being the only record breaker here today." Hearing Mr. Fraser's comment, Eddie is now out to break the record. Eddie is not about to let Bobby B steal the whole show today. Once the men are finished with their preliminary heats, the women are up in the 60-meter dash. Up for the university is Erica, Allison, and Karen. As the university's three sprinters head to the starting line, Mr. Finley again walks up to Mr. Fraser. Pointing to his clipboard, Mr. Fraser tells Mr. Finley, "Eddie is confident he can break the world record in the 60-meter dash today. He had a really good preliminary run." Mr. Finley replies, "Good. We're counting on it." Mr. Finley looks at Mr. Fraser's clipboard, seeing Eddie's expected time in the final. Mr. Fraser nods his head a few times, followed by Mr. Finley giving Mr. Fraser a thumbs up. Watching Mr. Fraser and Mr. Finley carefully from the stands, Mayor Jameson is highly convinced that Mr. Finley is who he says he is. In the past, Mayor Jameson has not been able to get on the floor during a track meet. Somehow, Mr. Finley has been granted that privilege. Mayor Jameson is also 100% convinced that Mr. Fraser is in on the action. At the finish line, Karen crosses first, followed by Erica and Allison. All three of the university's women in the heat have secured the right to participate in the 60-meter dash final, as have the men. Mayor Jameson checks the results of the women's preliminary heat against his information and begins to feel very confident. Mid-morning, the call is heard for the men's 400-meter dash. All eyes will be on this race as Braden, the world record holder, will be out to kick ass. Hill and Running Bull, however, have been training and will not let Braden get off easy. In contrast to past meets, Braden does not chant, rant, or dance as he gets on the track. Knowing that the cheering from the stands is for him, Braden waves to the crowd, raising both his energy level and that of his fans. Knowing that they are up against the world record holder, the confidence of Braden's opponents fades. The runners get behind the blocks. Once the runners are set, the buzzer sounds, and the two-lap race gets underway. As expected, Braden takes the lead early in the race. Halfway through the first lap, Running Bull and Hill are fighting it out for second place. At the end of the first of two laps, Braden is in a league by himself. The crowd cheers louder, knowing that they are seeing a world-class performance. Wanting to beat the world record that he owns, Braden does not relent. At the finish line, Braden crosses with a time of 44.08 seconds. Hill takes second place, and Running Bull takes third place. The crowd cheers wildly as Braden takes a victory lap, waving to the crowd. In the stands, Mayor Bradford Jameson reviews the document he purchased from Mr. Finley. Thus far, the document is spot on. The projected winners were the actual winners of the race. And the projected times denoted in the document have been quite accurate. Mayor Jameson has concluded that he has found the people who can make his gambling empire a huge success. After a few more events, the call is made for the men's 60-meter dash final. Eddie is fired up and ready to test the world record. On the way to the starting line, Eddie tells Mark, "Your buddy is already there." He's looking around like he's paranoid or something. Mark replies, "It's too bad the president is watching us. We'll probably have to behave." Eddie asks, "Why?" Mark replies, "Good point." Eddie gets behind the blocks in lane 4, Mark in lane 5, and Hoffa in lane 3. Looking over at Alan Madison in lane 1, Mark comments to Eddie, "It looks like Alan Madison threw a gutter ball." In a sprint, the outside lanes are generally occupied by those with the poorest qualifying times. Lanes 4 and 5 are reserved for those with the best qualifying times. Madison, understanding Mark's innuendo, looks over at Mark, wanting to say something, but he knows he can't. Mark looks over at the starter whom he recognizes from past meets and, using the accent of Zell the dentist from the movie Marathon Man, asks him, "Is it safe?" Apparently also seeing the movie, the starter replies, "It is very safe." Mark again asks, "But, I want to know, is it safe?" The starter replies, "It is very safe. It couldn't be safer." Mark and the starter both understand they are referring to Nacho Brocklin, who has graduated and not present today. The officials are enjoying a peaceful meet, with no physical altercations thus far. Madison, however, believes that Mark is somehow making reference to him and gets a little unraveled. The starter announces to the finalists, "This is the final for the 60-meter dash. Good luck to all of you. On your marks." The finalists get into the blocks, ready to fight it out for the title of the division's fastest sprinter. The starter announces, "Set," and the runners get highly focused, waiting for the signal. The buzzer sounds, and the 8 finalists are all off to a strong start. 10 meters into the race, Eddie already breaks away from the pack, as Mark and Hoffa remain tied. In another 10 meters, Mark takes a slight lead over Hoffa. Halfway through, at 30 meters, it is clearly a one-man race, with two runners in contention for second place. At the finish line, Eddie takes first place, Mark takes second place, and Hoffa takes third place. Madison, coming in seventh place, is no longer confident at all in his ability to place in any race in the division. Looking up at the scoreboard, in excitement, Eddie throws his fist into the air. The medalists exchange high fives and fist bumps as they make their way to the oval track. Taking a victory lap around the oval track, Eddie, Mark, and Hoffa receive a standing ovation. Knowing exactly where Mayor Jameson is seated, Eddie points up to the stands and smiles. The group heads back to the team's bench, where they are greeted by more high fives and fist bumps. In the stands, Mayor Jameson checks his documentation, paying particular attention to the expected results of the 60-meter dash final. Eddie was projected to win, Mark was projected to take second place, and Hoffa was projected to take third place. The documentation states that Eddie's expected time would be faster than 6.52 seconds, which represents the world record. Looking at the scoreboard, the mayor sees that Eddie ran 60 meters in 6.48 seconds, exactly as predicted. Mayor Jameson becomes somewhat nervous, seeing events unfold right before his eyes exactly as Mr. Finley predicted. Glancing down at the university's team bench, the mayor sees Mr. Finley speaking with Mr. Fraser and Dr. Zunde. Catching Mr. Finley's attention is Dr. Zunde, who points over to the field events area where Bobby B. is preparing to make his first throw of the morning. After a short discussion, Mr. Finley stands back against the wall, watching the meet as if he were the meet director. Dr. Zunde heads back over to the field events area, taking a seat on the bench as Bobby B. gets to work. In the field events area, Bobby B. takes hold of the shot put, tossing it up in the air a few times. Stepping onto the pad, Bobby B. points up to the stands where the president is seated and smiles. Preparing himself mentally, Bobby B. recalls his optimal release angle. Getting into position, the shot doc wants his first attempt to be the winning throw. Using the discus technique, Bobby B. goes into the spin and, letting out a primal scream, hurls the shot put with more force than he can ever remember. Soaring through the air, the shot put lands past the 20-meter mark, representing an awesome throw. Bobby B. steps off the pad, waiting to hear his distance. The field judges take the measurement. The head field judge is called over to the shot put pad, causing Bobby B. to wonder whether he fouled. Bobby B. breathes a sigh of relief as he sees the head field judge walk out into the red zone. The head field judge examines the tape, ensuring that it is properly positioned. The tape is pulled tight, and another measurement is taken. The head field judge, along with yet another field judge, again verifies the measurement. The announcement then comes from the meet announcer, with a throw of 22.20 meters. Robert Bradshaw has just set a new world record in the shot put. Seeing the second world record broken at the meet today, the crowd cheers wildly. At the team bench, Mr. Fraser and Provost Layton celebrate, exchanging high fives. Kathy and Paula join in, exchanging high fives with Erica, Mr. Fraser, and Provost Layton. In no time, the whole team has joined in the celebration. While the celebration goes on, the women walk towards the blocks and are ready to run the 60-meter dash final. Up for the university are Karen, Erica, and Allison. Provost Layton has decided that, by placing Tessa in the longer sprints, she is more likely to win the gold medal, which she did earlier in the 400-meter dash. Arriving at the starting line, the women hope to maintain the streak of sweeping each event. The starter announces to the women, "This is the final for the 60-meter dash. Good luck to everyone. On your marks." The finalists get into the blocks, ready to fight it out for the title of the division's fastest woman sprinter. The starter announces, "Set," and the runners get focused, waiting for the signal. The buzzer sounds and in 10 meters, Karen, Erica, and Allison break away from the pack. Halfway through, at 30 meters, the race is essentially over. Karen is far in front, and Erica is fighting it out with Allison for second place. At the finish line, Karen takes first place, Erica takes second place, and Allison takes third place. Happy that she transferred to the university, Allison realizes that, had she not made the transfer, she would have been up against Michelle or Amanda in the final, both of who could have beaten her in this event. Looking up at the scoreboard, Karen sees her time of 7.10 seconds, tying the women's world record. Karen takes a victory lap with Erica and Allison as the crowd cheers. Passing the field events area, Erica leaves the track and jogs past Bobby B., giving him a high five and hug for breaking the world record in the shot put. Rejoining her teammates, they all head back to the team bench. Immediately before lunch, the 1,500-meter run gets underway. On the track for the university are Mitchell, Akinmola, and Davidson, who are expected to place in that order. During the race, Mr. Fraser meets with Provost Layton and Dr. Zunde. Mr. Fraser asks Dr. Zunde, "How are we doing in the field events?" Dr. Zunde replies, "Eddie took second place in the shot put. Green took third place. Actually, we've swept every field event so far." Mr. Fraser exclaims, "These guys are amazing. The runners are clocking, and the field guys are rocking." Provost Layton reminds Mr. Fraser, "According to our stats, the afternoon should go a little easier." Mr. Finley walks over to the private coaches' meeting, telling Mr. Fraser, "So far, coach, your projections are very accurate." Quite confident of his team's abilities, Mr. Fraser grins, explaining, "I have a score to settle with some of these other coaches. They want us kicked out of the division because, last year, we won most of the medals. This year, I want all the medals. I just want to hear them all whine next year." Dr. Zunde assures Mr. Fraser and those around, The way things are going, you'll get all the medals, George. And over in the field area, the whining has already begun. We've heard it all morning. Focusing their attention on the finish of the 1,500-meter run, the coaches watch as Mitchell and Akinmola fight it out for the gold medal. On the final lap, Akinmola is in the lead, but the race isn't over yet. Drafting 2 meters behind Akinmola, Mitchell presents a problem. Knowing that Mitchell will imminently make a move, Akinmola is worried. On the back straightaway, Mitchell remains in second place. Surprising everyone, coming around the final curve, Mitchell kicks in the afterburner, leaving Akinmola in the dust. At the finish line, Mitchell crosses first, followed by Akinmola. Davidson, finishing in third place, is looking forward to winning the gold medal in this race next year once Mitchell and Akinmola have graduated. 10 seconds after Davidson crosses the finish line, the contestant taking fourth place crosses, not the least bit happy with his performance. Lunchtime brings a few interesting developments. In what appears to be another divisional meeting of the track coaches, Mr. Fraser, and the rest of the university coaching staff excluded, echoes of discontent can be heard as the morning's events are being discussed. While the other coaches are complaining to each other, Mr. Fraser is having his own meeting, but not with the other coaches. Mr. Fraser, his coaching staff, and the university's athletes are being interviewed by Angela Meadows, who is broadcasting selected events live on television. Live on the air, Angela asks Mr. Fraser, "Coach, you've been having an awesome day so far. Can you tell us what happened on that track this morning?" Mr. Fraser responds, "So far, we've had a really great day, Angela. Our guys have been training hard since last spring and have been really looking forward to today. Many of them were denied the chance to compete in the Olympics this past summer. With the president attending the meet today, they want to show him what they can do." Angela announces, "I don't think anyone has ever seen such domination by one team in a track meet before. That would be the understatement of the day." Angela asks, "Two world records were broken here this morning, Coach. Did this come as a surprise to you?" Mr. Fraser replies, "Not really. We knew the potential was there. Robert Bradshaw has been flirting with the shot put record for a while now. Today was his day. And in the 100-meter dash, during the divisional meet last spring, Eddie Boganskaya claimed the record. Films show that Eddie is faster out of the blocks than anyone in the world. Today's record in the 60-meter dash really comes as no surprise." Wanting a preview of this afternoon, Angela asks, "What can we expect to see this afternoon, Coach?" Mr. Fraser explains, "We have a lot of momentum going. Most of the runners you'll see this afternoon are at the top of their game. We'll have to see what the other teams have." Angela asks, "How about in the field events, Coach? What can we expect to see this afternoon?" Mr. Fraser replies, "Dr. Zunde, our field events coach, could shed a little more light on that than I can. Let's get him over here." Mr. Fraser waves over at Dr. Zunde, who joins the interview. Angela continues her interview, announcing, "Dr. Zunde, you've had a great morning out there in the field events today. Robert Bradshaw claimed the world shot put record, and if I am not mistaken, in the field events, your guys have won every medal so far. Congratulations, Coach." Dr. Zunde energetically responds, "Thank you, Angela. These men and women are really amazing. For many of them, this is their last year in competition, so this team has a lot of experience. The younger guys are looking very strong. Just take a look at Sean Green in the shot put. He's a sophomore this year and took the bronze medal. Next year, he'll be the top contender for the gold medal. And I think we'll have a good chance of sweeping the pole vault and the high jump later this afternoon." While Angela moves on to interviewing the athletes, Dr. Nicholson, the disgruntled coach from Dogpatch University, approaches Mr. Fraser, which cannot bring good news. Mr. Fraser tries to brush him off, but Dr. Nicholson insists, "We need to have a talk." Mr. Fraser replies, "I really don't have time right now." In no uncertain terms, Dr. Nicholson tells Mr. Fraser, "I want my camera, microphone, and binoculars back, and I want them now." Mr. Fraser informs the coach, "Your equipment is locked up in the evidence room at our campus police department. Please see them. I'm sure they'd be glad to arrest, help you." Dr. Nicholson is not in the mood for Mr. Fraser's antics. Mr. Fraser is not in the mood for Dr. Nicholson either. Dr. Nicholson sarcastically asks Mr. Fraser, "Just what is that supposed to mean?" Mr. Fraser asks, "Are you claiming the Nikon camera we confiscated is yours?" Dr. Nicholson bluntly replies, "Yes, I am." "Do you have a problem with that?" Mr. Fraser asks, "Have you spoken to Mr. Stupek, who I presume represents your university?" Dr. Nicholson responds, "Not recently." "But what does that have to do with anything?" "I want my equipment back." Mr. Fraser smiles and replies, "I'm sure you do." Trying to continue the conversation, Dr. Nicholson attempts to speak, but Mr. Fraser interrupts, laughs, and tells Dr. Nicholson, "Go ahead and lay claim to the camera then. Our police department ran the serial number of the camera, and it was reported stolen 3 months ago. They know who the rightful owner is, and it is not you. So, as I said, they might just arrest you." Dr. Nicholson turns an interesting shade of red and tells Mr. Fraser, "You haven't heard the last of this." Mr. Fraser smiles and tells Dr. Nicholson, "Good luck this afternoon. You'll need it." Now irate, Dr. Nicholson walks back to his bench, knowing that Mr. Fraser took the gold medal in this encounter. Kathy walks over with Paula and tells the coaching staff, "We got you guys a lunch." Mr. Fraser replies, "Thank you," as does Provost Layton and Dr. Zunde. The coaching staff takes a seat on the bench and digs in. Mr. Fraser asks Kathy and Paula, "Were you able to find anything out?" Kathy replies, "Yeah. From what I saw, there are a few new names with a one next to them, but everyone else competing this afternoon we already know about. A one next to an athlete's name indicates that they are in their first year of eligibility." Mr. Fraser replies, "Good." Kathy and Paula have been busy and visited the meet clerk's desk, perusing the event sheets for this afternoon. Provost Layton asks Kathy and Paula, "Did you recognize anyone who may pose a problem?" Paula explains, "Unless they've been training hard, there's no one that we haven't beat before." Provost Layton, who has developed quite the competitive spirit, replies, "Good. We're on track then." After attending the divisional meeting of track coaches earlier this year, Provost Layton also wants the team to win all the individual medals in this meet, and all the gold medals in the relay events. And, like Mr. Fraser, Provost Layton cannot wait until next year's meeting of the division's coaches. After lunch, the first race up is the 200-meter dash, which will be followed by a few relay events. This year, Mark, Davida, and Eddie's brother, John, will be running in the 200-meter dash. As they head to the starting line, Mark again spies Alan Madison. Mark walks up to his lane, passing Madison on the way. Madison asks Mark, "Hey, where's that other guy?" Mark replies, "If you're talking about Eddie, he's not running in this race." Pointing to John, Mark informs Madison, "But this is his brother. He's going to kick your ass big time." Holding his head up high, Madison exclaims, "Hey, I'm Alan Madison. You don't talk to me that way." John looks at Madison and laughs, eroding Madison's confidence. From the inside lane, Mark looks over to lane 7, where Madison is behind the blocks. Mark gives Madison a long and hard stare, which is certain to provide fuel for a future confrontation. But the athletes have been instructed by their coaches to be on their best behavior since the president is in attendance at the meet today. The starter announces, "On your marks," followed by, "Set." The runners get in the set position, waiting for the buzzer. The buzzer sounds, and the 200-meter dash is underway. As expected, Mark takes the lead, but the real fight is between Davida and John for second place. Into the curve, John appears to have a slight advantage over Davida. Into the final straightaway, John breaks away, crossing the finish line right after Mark. Davida takes third place, running a respectable time that would have won the gold medal if Mark and John were not competing today. The women's 200-meter dash gets underway, running concurrent with several field events. Dr. Zunde walks over to the field event area to remind Sepulveda not to fight Akinmola for the gold medal in the high jump and to be satisfied with the silver medal. Following the high jump, Sepulveda will be competing in the long jump where he is expected to win the gold medal, so he will need to preserve his leg strength. Fortunately, for Sepulveda, the triple jump was held in the morning, an event in which he won the gold medal. Dr. Zunde heads back to the team bench and is intercepted by Dr. Bonomo. With quite an odd introduction, Dr. Bonomo tells Dr. Zunde, "So, I hear through the grapevine that you're my replacement." Dr. Zunde laughs, telling Dr. Bonomo, "It would appear that way." Dr. Bonomo asks Dr. Zunde, "So, how did you land this job?" Dr. Zunde explains, "When you left, George asked me if I would help him out for a year until he can find someone else. So, I agreed. I'm sure he'll find someone who is qualified by then." Dr. Bonomo tells Dr. Zunde, "George really turned track and field into a high-tech sport at the university. He has everything down to a science. He really did a great job. Unfortunately, at my new university, they don't see the value in any of that." Dr. Zunde asks, "Can I talk you into taking your old job back?" Dr. Bonomo replies, "No. I don't think so, Gerhard. I've retired and taken this job, which is outside the state university system. So, I collect my pension and a salary. I'm not teaching anymore. I just took the coaching job to stay in the sport." Dr. Zunde tells Dr. Bonomo, "I can understand that. It sounds like a good arrangement. I can't say I blame you." Dr. Bonomo explains, "Gerhard, listen to this. I work for 3 hours a day, and I have the afternoons off. I can't wait for the spring. Donna and I are going to head to the beach in the afternoons. And we'll have more time to spend with the grandchildren." Dr. Zunde and Dr. Bonomo talk for a while, leaving many other coaches wondering what the unusually long discussion may be about. They both then head to their respective teams' benches, rejoining their teams. When Dr. Zunde was training for the Olympics, Dr. Bonomo was his coach. They have kept in contact over the years, meeting for dinner every once in a while. Dr. Bonomo, aided by Dr. Owens, has implemented Dr. Zunde and Dr. Amherst's mathematical analysis calculating the optimal release angles of the field implements. Unfortunately, at Dr. Bonomo's new university, the coaching staff does not see the value in such analysis. The last event of the day is the 4x400-meter relay. This year, Johnson is in the stands watching. Taking Johnson's place in the acclaimed 4x400-meter relay team will be Eddie's brother, John. Mark will lead off, followed by John, Eddie, and then Braden. On the way to the blocks, instead of ranting, Braden is dancing and singing the song Jungle Boogie by Kool and the Gang, including the part by Don Boyce, who is known as the voice of the boogie by the band. Eddie, John, and Mark join in dancing, leaving the vocals to Braden. Finishing his performance, Braden receives a standing ovation from those nearby in the stands. It's no secret whose side the fans are now on. With the first heat in the blocks and ready to go, the starter announces, "On your marks." Braden yells out, "Get down with the boogie." The starter chuckles, also enjoying Braden's earlier performance. The starter announces, "Set." The buzzer sounds, and Mark takes off. Waiting inside the track with Eddie and John, Braden warms up, continuing his earlier performance of Jungle Boogie. As Mark runs his leg, Eddie looks up into the stands and tells John, "No one's paying attention to the race. They are all watching Braden." John replies, "Braden is way too good at that." Eddie replies, "Yeah, seriously. He's definitely been practicing this." John gets on the track, ready to receive the baton from Mark. John takes off while Braden continues his first-class performance. Returning to the transition zone, Mark recovers from his run as he watches Braden. Eddie tells Mark, "I hope Braden doesn't wear himself out." Mark assures Eddie, "We'll win anyway. He's just warming up." Eddie gets on the track, dancing in sync with Braden until John approaches with the baton. John enters the transition zone, and Eddie takes off, inheriting a significant lead. Eddie is well into the curve when the team in second place approaches the transition zone. As another team's runner is about to transfer the baton, that team's incoming runner glances over at Braden singing and dancing, and fails to deliver the baton to the outgoing runner. The incoming and outgoing runners both abruptly stop, as to not leave the transition zone, and transfer the baton. As the incoming runner leaves the track, a collision occurs between him and another incoming runner. Both runners go down hard and are slow to get up. Mark mentions to John, "Wow. I haven't seen any shit like this since high school." The officials clear the track as quickly as they can, hoping no further collisions occur. Braden gets on the track, waiting for Eddie to deliver the goods. Eddie enters the transition zone, seamlessly handing off to Braden. Braden takes off, out to secure the gold medal. When Eddie returns to the transition zone, Mark tells him, "The team that was in second place messed up their handoff and caused a collision on the track with the team that was in third place." Eddie asks, "Oh, really?" So that's when the crowd got suddenly silent. Mark replies, "I guess." Braden crosses the finish line, sealing the victory. Looking up at the electronic timer, which reads 3:01:26, the relay team exchanges high fives. The newly formed 4x400-meter relay team continues in the reputation of the original relay team of being undefeatable. Immediately after the meet, Mayor Jameson is greeted by Tony and Dino. Dino tells Mayor Jameson, "Mr. Finley would like to see you, sir. He's down on the track. Please follow us, sir." Wondering why Mr. Finley wants to see him, Mayor Jameson asks, "What's this about?" Dino whispers to the mayor, "Mr. Finley is going to want to hear your opinion on the accuracy of his information. He will also ask you if you want to conduct future business." Mayor Jameson is now quite confident that he has been invited to be an insider and has been accepted as a business associate of Mr. Finley. Now on his way to riches, Mayor Jameson walks confidently alongside Tony and Dino as he goes to meet Mr. Finley. At the university's team bench, a great victory celebration is already underway as the tiers and podiums are put in place for the awards ceremony. Winning all the medals in the individual events and the gold medal in every relay event, the team has great cause for celebration. What Mr. Fraser and his team accomplished today is unprecedented. Escorting Mayor Jameson to meet Mr. Finley is Tony and Dino. Not wanting to attract a lot of attention, Mr. Finley tells Mayor Jameson, "Let's step off to the side for a moment." Mr. Finley and Mayor Jameson move off to the side, with Tony and Dino standing by with their arms crossed, giving the clear impression they are bodyguards. Opening the meeting, Mr. Finley asks Mayor Jameson, "So, tell me what you think." The mayor replies, this list was exactly what happened today." Mr. Finley replies, "I know. I told you. We don't figure out the odds. We control them." Mr. Finley asks the mayor, "Did you have a profitable day?" Mayor Jameson replies, "Yes, sir. We most certainly did. Mr. Finley smiles, telling the mayor, "Good. I'm very glad to hear that." Taking the bait, Mayor Jameson asks, "What would it take for us to do more business together?" That is exactly the question the undercover officer was hoping to hear. Mr. Finley replies, "That can be arranged. But not here. I'll call you Monday. We'll set up another meeting before I head back to the island." The mayor tells Mr. Finley, "I'll be anxiously waiting for your call." Mr. Finley tells Mayor Jameson, "We shouldn't hang around too long after the meet, if you know what I mean. Our work is done here." The mayor replies, "I understand." Walking past Mr. Fraser, Mr. Finley shakes his hand, telling the coach, "Good job, coach." Mayor Jameson clearly gets the impression that Mr. Finley runs the show. The mayor heads out, looking forward to his paycheck. Mr. Finley, Tony, and Dino also head out, making sure the mayor makes himself scarce. Once Tony and Dino see that the mayor has left, the undercover officers head back to their homes, joining their families for the remainder of the weekend. The meet announcer announces that the awards ceremony will begin shortly. As the university's team settles around the bench, Mark comments, "We might as well move the bench right in front of the podium." Hill laughs, telling Mark, "What's the matter? Is the walk too far for you?" Mark jokingly replies, "Yeah. This meet really wore me out." Hill laughs and informs Mark, "What are you talking about? You barely ran a mile today. You're getting real lazy." It appears that Hill will take Mark's place as the team comedian next year. Once the preliminary announcements are out of the way, the meet announcer announces the gold medal in the men's 60-meter dash, setting a new world record of 6.48 seconds, goes to Edward Boganskaya. The crowd cheers wildly as Eddie walks up to the first place tier. The meet announcer announces the silver medal in the 60-meter dash goes to Mark Svoboda, and the bronze medal goes to James Hoffer. The winners are draped with their medals and wave to the crowd. The crowd cheers, knowing that they have witnessed history today. Next to be called to the podium are the winners of the women's 60-meter dash. The meet announcer announces the gold medal in the women's 60-meter dash, tying the world record of 7.10 seconds, goes to Karen Coy. The crowd cheers as Karen walks up to the first place tier. The meet announcer announces the silver medal in the 60-meter dash goes to Erika Gabriel, and the bronze medal goes to Allison Osborne. Allison, with the biggest smile on her face, has been waiting for this moment for a long time. The winners are draped with their medals and wave to the crowd. The crowd cheers, again knowing that they have witnessed history today. As the awards ceremony continues, Mr. Fraser, Provost Layton, and Dr. Zunday stand behind their team's bench, watching as, one by one, the athletes head to the podium. Angela Meadows and the television crew are broadcasting the ceremony live, which will also be rebroadcast at a future date. Off to the side, Captain Gabriel and Officer Hayes watch, glad to see their undercover operation went smoothly today. Later in the awards ceremony, Bobby B. is called to the stage. The meet announcer announces the gold medal in the shot put, setting a new world record with a throw of 22.20 meters, Robert Bradshaw. Bobby B. walks up to the stage, waving to the crowd. The crowd cheers for the shot doc, who has been waiting for this moment for a long time. The meet announcer announces the silver medal in the shot put goes to Edward Boganskaya, and the bronze medal goes to Sean Green. Eddie and Green walk up to the stage, give Bobby B. a high five, then stand on their tiers. The winners are draped with their medals and wave to the crowd as they head back to the team bench. Once the awards ceremony is over, many of the spectators come down from the stands to meet up with the athletes. Joining the team this year is Barbara and Johnson, who are both now teaching at the high school. Mr. Fraser's wife, Dr. Amherst, and the parents of many of the athletes are among the visitors today. K. Karen's parents and Aunt Jeannie come down from the stands to congratulate Karen, who had a great meet. Running up to them, Karen asks, "Did you guys see me run?" Karen's father gives her a big hug, telling her, "Yes. You did wonderful." Karen tells her father, "Today was a good day. We did great." Karen's Aunt Jeannie tells Karen, "You tied the world record in the 60 meters. You are awesome, girl. You're on track to break the record sometime this year." Karen gets a big hug from her aunt, who is very happy to see that Karen had an awesome meet. Karen and her family mingle with the team, where congratulatory gestures, such as high fives, fist bumps, and hugs ensue. Walking over to her mother, Karen whispers, "Did you tell them that I know?" Karen's mother hits herself on the side of the head and replies, "This is not a good time for you to start up. Can't this wait?" Karen tells her mother, "You've had almost 6 months now. Your time is up." Losing her composure, Karen's mother exclaims, "Don't do this to me now." Catching wind of contention between Karen and her mother, Karen's father exclaims, "Oh, Phyllis. Cut it out already. Stop making a scene." Coming to Karen's rescue is Paula, whose presence will likely make Karen's mother act a little more civil. Giving Karen a high five, Paula exclaims, "Great day, girl. You rock." Karen replies, "Thank you so much." Introducing Paula, Karen tells her mother, "This is Paula. Paula ran with the team when I was a freshman, and last year, she was one of my coaches." Introducing Mrs. Coy, Karen tells Paula, "Paula, I'd like you to meet Mrs. Coy. Mrs. Coy is my former babysitter." Karen can see her mother's blood pressure rising and is waiting for the cork to pop. When the cork finally does pop, Karen's mother exclaims, "I've cooked for you all these years. I've done your laundry." Before her mother can finish her ranting, Karen says to her mother, "Yeah, well, your cooking was almost fit to eat, and most of the time, it needed something to kill the taste. And, yeah, cooking and laundry. Babysitters sometimes have to do that stuff." Karen's mother tightens her lips and exclaims under her breath, "What am I going to do with you?" Karen suggests, "Why don't you put me up for adoption? Maybe Aunt Jeannie will adopt me." Karen and Paula walk away, joining the team, who are checking out each other's medals. Paula, who has heard all about Karen's Aunt Jeannie being her biological mother and that her parents adopted her, asks Karen, "What was that all about?" Karen explains, "Last summer, right before classes started, I told her that she can explain to my dad and Aunt Jeannie that I know that I was adopted." "Did she do it?" "No. She's had almost a half year, and she hasn't told them yet. So, as of now, I'm letting my dad and aunt know that I know." Paula replies, "Good. You should. You go, girl." Quite unexpectedly, a Secret Service agent walks over to the university's team bench. Heading straight on for Mr. Fraser, the agent informs Mr. Fraser, "Excuse me for the interruption, sir, but the president would like to meet the members of your team." Loaded with energy, Mr. Fraser tells the agent, "Great. Have him come on down." The agent explains to Mr. Fraser, "I'm not sure you understand, sir. The team will have to meet the president in a private room where we have security details set up." Mr. Fraser, who does not see himself as the cruise director of today's activities, tells the Secret Service agent, "I understand your concern. Please feel free to set that meeting up yourself." The Secret Service agent is flustered at Mr. Fraser's nonchalant attitude toward the president. But, after all, the president did rob several of the university's team members of an Olympic gold medal. And, not to mention, the president has less than 1 week left in office. Overhearing the Secret Service agent's discussion with Mr. Fraser is Eddie and Kathy. Eddie, not wanting to meet the president, tells Kathy, "Let's get out of here." Kathy replies, "Yeah. We're done here anyway. The meet is over. Word travels quickly and, getting to Mark and Paula, they decide to leave as well. As the Secret Service agent is attempting to set up the meeting with the president, Eddie tells Mr. Fraser, "Me and Kathy are headed out. It's been a long day." Mr. Fraser replies, "Congratulations again. Have a great rest of the weekend, and we'll see you Monday morning." Mark and Paula likewise head out, as does much of the rest of the team. Within 5 minutes, the team is gone, and the coaching staff is preparing to leave themselves. Before Karen leaves, her Aunt Jeannie walks up to her and asks, "What was all that going on with your mother?" Karen replies, "She's just mad at me again." Quite familiar with this problem, Jeannie sighs and replies, "So, what else is new?" She seems like she's been mad at the world recently. Knowing that the cat will be let out of the bag sooner or later, Karen tells her aunt, "I know why she's mad." Jeannie, of course, asks, "Why?" Karen tells her aunt, "Let's walk out together." On the way out of the Coliseum, Karen explains, "My mother, who I am now calling my former babysitter because she's been such a bitch my whole life, has blood type AB negative. Mine is type O. So, my mother can't be my biological mother." Still not knowing all that Karen knows, Jeannie replies, "Wow. You figured it out." Karen replies, "Yeah, Mom. I figured it out." Jeannie cries, giving Karen a big heartfelt hug. Karen immediately feels the love from her biological mother that she never felt from the woman who raised her. Jeannie tells Karen, "Come on, let's go and have lunch together." Karen and Jeannie walk out of the arena together, certain to learn more than they expected today. Now that the team bench is fully cleared out, Provost Layton tells Mr. Fraser and Dr. Zunday the team didn't seem too excited over meeting the president. Mr. Fraser replies, "I can't say I blame them. Maybe it's a good thing. I can only imagine Braden telling the president that he got his ass kicked in the election." Dr. Zunday laughs and replies, "Hopefully, with the new guy, we'll be back at the Olympics in 4 years. Provost Layton comments, "That sounds like it's a very long time from now." At the end of a very successful day, the coaches head to their automobiles and head home. Monday arrives very soon. Eddie and Bobby B, both who set a world record this weekend at the divisional meet, are hard at work at the service station. Virtually no one driving into the station this morning is aware of Eddie's and Bobby B's accomplishments except for, perhaps, Officer Richard Hayes, who just drove into the station for a routine visit. Officer Hayes walks up, asking, "What's up?" Eddie replies, "What's up?" Officer Hayes replies, "Both of you did a great job this weekend. Congratulations." Eddie and Bobby B both reply, "Thank you." Officer Hayes asks Eddie, "Do you have a minute?" Eddie replies, "Yeah. Let's go into the office and sit down." Eddie and Officer Hayes go into the office, leaving Bobby B finishing the oil change and radiator flush he is working on. Richard tells Eddie, "The operation went perfect this weekend. We got enough on the wire to put this Mayor Jameson character away for a long time. But we want to break this entire ring, so we're not done yet." The undercover officers have the mayor convinced that Mr. Finley, Tony, and Dino are headed back to the islands this week. So, they want to set up one more meeting. Eddie asks, "Am I in this meeting?" Richard replies, "Yes. We need your help. What I want to do is have a meeting with you, Mark, and maybe someone else we can trust to be present in the meeting with this idiot of a mayor and the undercover officers." Eddie comments, "The mayor is kind of stupid, if you ask me." Richard tells Eddie, "Stupid isn't even the word for it. This guy is about as dumb as they come." Explaining the plan of action, Richard asks Eddie, "Do you think Bradshaw can help us out?" Eddie replies, "Yeah. I'm sure he'd be glad to. Do you want me to get him?" Richard replies, "Sure. Let's bring him in on this." Eddie yells back to Bobby B in the shop, inviting him to the meeting. Walking into the office, Bobby B. asks, "What's up?" Richard gives Bobby B. a brief explanation of how the police department plans to break the gambling ring wide open. Richard then informs Bobby B., "We want to bring you into the operation." Not even knowing what he is getting into, Bobby B. replies, "Sure. I'd be glad to help." Bobby B. takes a seat, listening carefully as Richard explains his plan of action, which is to gain more of the mayor's trust and to obtain more evidence against the mayor. Bobby B. agrees that he can play the part Richard describes. Once the plans are finalized, Eddie and Bobby B. get back to work, and Officer Hayes gets back on the road. At lunchtime, Eddie asks Bobby B., "Hey, can you follow me to my house right now?" Kind of perplexed, Bobby B. asks, "Are we knocking off early today?" Eddie explains, "No. I want to drive Kathy's bus home tonight, so I want to bring my MGB home now, while Kathy is still in school." Bobby B. replies, "I get it. Yeah, I can do that." Eddie tells Bobby B., "Thanks. You drive my MGB, and I'll drive the bus." Bobby B. seriously wonders how he is going to fit in Eddie's MGB. Eddie temporarily closes the station and throws Bobby B. the keys to the MGB. Bobby B., a bit large to fit in the MGB, finds out quickly that he cannot easily fit in the driver's seat, but eventually manages. Eddie drives Kathy's Volkswagen bus, with the newly fitted engine from a Porsche 930. Arriving at Eddie's house, Eddie gets into the MGB and drives it into the garage. Eddie and Bobby B. then head back to the service station in Kathy's newly completed Volkswagen bus. On the way back to the station, Bobby B., who has a dune buggy and a BSA Starfire motorcycle, asks Eddie, "What does it take to make a bus like this?" Eddie replies, "There's the cost of the bus, plus the cost of obtaining a 930 engine, and a lot of labor." Bobby B. tells Eddie, "I think I know what I want." Eddie asks, "What's that?" "An MGB." Bobby B. laughs and replies, "Yeah, right. I'm thinking that I'll keep my bike and build a bus like this." Eddie curiously asks, "Do you mean that I'll be building your bus?" Bobby B. replies, "No. Just show me what to do, and I'll do the work." Eddie, relieved that he will not be building another bus, tells Bobby B., "You'll definitely learn a lot." Eddie and Bobby B. arrive back at the service station and reopen for the afternoon. Before he gets back to work, Bobby B. makes a few phone calls, putting the word out that he is looking for a wrecked Porsche 930 or 911 with an intact engine. First on Bobby B.'s list is to call Vinny, from the body shop across the street, who seems to always find what Eddie is looking for. Seeing what Bobby B. is up to, Eddie suggests, "Hey, you could buy a new Porsche 930 and a new Volkswagen bus and swap the engines." Bobby B. asks, "Do you mean put the engine from the bus in the 930? Eddie replies, "Exactly." Bobby B. thinks about it, telling Eddie, "Yeah. Why not? I could do that." Eddie replies, "Forget it, bro. I was messing with you. No one would buy the 930 with a VW bus engine in it. And I'm not helping you with that part of the project. Just find a 930 or a 911 engine and sell what you don't use as parts." Eddie and Bobby B. eventually get back to work, with Bobby B. contemplating his new project and Eddie waxing Kathy's new high-performance Volkswagen bus. The next day, before Eddie opens for the day, he and Bobby B. are waiting in the storage building behind the service station, where a very important meeting is about to get underway. Inside the storage building, Eddie is in the process of putting together a small gym that he and Bobby B. occasionally put to use before work. Eddie's track bicycle stands up against the wall, which he uses when he goes into the future to buy and sell gold. Near the door sits a table and 8 chairs, which were brought in late yesterday by Officer Hayes for this morning's meeting. Mr. Finley, Tony, and Dino walk through the open door, carefully looking around. Eddie introduces Bobby B. to Mr. Finley and the other undercover officers, who are quite surprised at Bobby B.'s size. Bobby B., Tony, and Dino try out some of the gym equipment as they are waiting for Mayor Jameson. After a few warm-up sets, Bobby B. loads the bar with 500 pounds. Tony and Dino spot Bobby B., who lifts the bar to his chest and up again with ease. Eddie and Mr. Finley sit at the table and talk, discussing this past weekend's meet. 5 minutes early, as expected, Mayor Jameson knocks on the door. Mr. Finley opens the door, and the mayor walks in. Tony walks outside, checking the area to make sure all is safe. Mr. Finley tells Tony, "Please do me a favor and guard the door." Tony replies, "Yes, sir." Tony steps outside, giving Mayor Jameson the impression that Mr. Finley is very security conscious. After some small talk, Mr. Finley tells everyone, "Please, take a seat." Opening his briefcase, Mr. Finley announces, "I think we all had a very good weekend. Everything went according to plan." Mayor Jameson knows, by now, that Mr. Finley is the boss and runs the meetings. Taking an envelope out of his briefcase with Eddie's name on it, Mr. Finley tosses the envelope to Eddie. Opening the envelope, Eddie takes out several thousand dollars in cash, quickly replacing the money back into the envelope. Mr. Finley then tosses an envelope to Bobby B., who likewise opens it, examines the contents, and places the money back into the envelope. Bobby B. tells Mr. Finley, "Thank you." Mr. Finley replies, "My pleasure. You both got a bonus for breaking the world record." The exercise of distributing cash was purely for the sake of demonstrating to Mayor Jameson how business is conducted. Mr. Finley tells the mayor, "I'm going to make you an offer. For this year, I'll cut you in for the entire track and field season. And I'll cut you in for the basketball season. But we don't start intervening with the outcome of basketball games until March. Next year, I'll cut you in for football, where the big money is." Mayor Jameson tells Mr. Finley, "Thank you very much, sir. I'd like to take you up on your offer." Mayor Jameson, hungry for money, is quick to agree to Mr. Finley's offer. Wanting to act as if he knows something, Mayor Jameson asks, "How about baseball? Do you work that sport?" Mr. Finley explains, "In football, the quarterback and one or two key offensive players control the game. In basketball, two or three key players can control the game. In baseball, there are too many variables, if you know what I mean. One or two lucky hits, and you can lose a lot of money." "I don't lose." Getting the distinct impression that Mr. Finley is only in it to win, Mayor Jameson replies, "I see." The door opens, and Mark walks in, announcing, "I'm sorry for being late." Mr. Finley tells Mark, "That's okay. I gave your cut to Eddie and Bobby B." Mr. Finley looks through his briefcase, removing an envelope with Mark's name on it. Tossing the envelope to Mark, Mr. Finley tells him, "I'm only kidding. Here's your cut." Continuing with the theatrics, Mark removes the money from his envelope, making sure that Mayor Jameson can see the cash. Mark places the money into his pocket and tells Mr. Finley, "Thank you, sir. And, again, I'm sorry I was a little late." Mark being late was part of the plan. Seeing that Mark is also involved, Mayor Jameson asks Mr. Finley, "How many athletes do you have on the inside?" Somewhat evading the question, and intentionally giving the mayor the distinct impression that his question crossed the line, Mr. Finley explains, "We have a few. I have enough to control the meet. But it would be nice to have a few more." Pushing his own agenda, Mr. Finley then informs the mayor, "I really wish I can get Axel Braden on the inside. Unfortunately, he's on the other side, if you know what I mean." Mayor Jameson, well aware that Axel Braden is a police officer, replies, "I can see how that would be a problem." Mr. Finley and Mayor Jameson discuss business, coming to an agreement and working arrangement for the remainder of the indoor track season. Eddie, Mark, and Bobby B. listen to the conversation between Mr. Finley and Mayor Jameson, wondering how stupid the mayor really is. The mayor, knowing that Bobby B. and Erica are building a house in his town, now concludes that Bobby B. has been on the inside for a while, as has Eddie and Mark. Mayor Jameson also concludes that Erica must also be on the inside, and at one point, Kathy and Paula were too. Once the meeting is adjourned, Mr. Finley tells Mayor Jameson, "Thank you for meeting with me today. I'll be back in a few weeks. I'd like to meet with you again when I return." The mayor replies, "Thank you very much, sir. I'm really looking forward to our meeting and doing business together." Mr. Finley tells the mayor, "Dino will escort you to your car. I hope you have a nice week." Before the mayor leaves, Mr. Finley tells Eddie, Mark, and Bobby B., "Before I leave, I need to discuss with you guys what I need to happen in the next 3 meets. It should only take a few minutes." Mayor Jameson can now clearly see how Mr. Finley determines the outcome of the meets. Mayor Jameson drives off in his car, thinking that life is about to get a little easier. Mr. Finley sounds very convincing to Mayor Jameson, the novice in the gambling industry. But when the situation is examined from the mayor's perspective, all the elements are there. Mr. Finley provided the mayor with the outcome of the meet before it happened, including the 2 world records that were broken. The mayor saw Mr. Finley speaking with Mr. Fraser and the coaching staff multiple times during the divisional meet. Mr. Finley appears to have a great working relationship with Eddie, Mark, and Bobby B. Those 3 team members appear to be financially well off. And today, the mayor saw a payoff with his own eyes. Inside Eddie's storage room, Eddie, Mark, and Bobby B. return the money to Mr. Finley. Bobby B., Tony, and Dino get a little workout in. Mr. Finley tells Eddie, "This is a nice setup you have here. Would it be possible to use the building for other undercover operations?" Eddie replies, "Sure. No problem. Next time, I might have the gym all finished." Mr. Finley tells Eddie, "I have a guy right now that I want to interrogate. I'd like to get him on that bench without a spotter. If he talks, we'll get Tony and Dino to lift the bar from his chest." Eddie replies, "You can't exactly do that in a public gym." Mr. Finley smiles and replies, "I know." Mr. Finley tells Eddie, "It sure looks like Tony and Dino want to come back. They are getting in a good workout." Eddie replies, "I like the names Mac, Mad Dog, and Bad Dog better." The undercover officer playing the part of Mr. Finley laughs and replies, "Addison Grimsby. I remember that. For all the education that guy had, he was another one that was kind of on the dumb side." Mr. Finley, Tony, and Dino head out, now having more information to incriminate Mayor Jameson. Eddie and Bobby B. get to work, with Mark joining them for a while. Since he is in the area, Mark has Eddie tune up his Jeep, which Eddie is glad to do. And Mayor Jameson sits comfortably back in his office, making calls to his agents in the field, building up his gambling empire. One weekend, in the afternoon, Kathy and Eddie head to Kathy's parents' house. Today, Kathy doesn't drive her Porsche 914 or Dune buggy, but rather drives her Volkswagen bus. Driving into her parents' driveway, Kathy tells Eddie, "My dad always wanted a Porsche. He's going to really like this. It's a Porsche with a Volkswagen body." Eddie laughs and replies, "That's about what it is. Looks like a Volkswagen. Drives like a Porsche. And it does 0 to 60 in about the same time as a 930. Kathy asks, "How do you know?" Eddie replies, "I timed it." Kathy, wanting more information, asks, "How is that?" "It's twice the size." Eddie then explains, "Your bus weighs a little less than the 930, but it's about as aerodynamic as a refrigerator." Kathy replies, "Are you making fun of my bus, Edward Boganskaya?" Eddie replies, "Yes, I am, Katerina Karakova." Kathy tells Eddie, "For your information, it's Katerina Boganskaya now." Eddie replies, "Yeah, I know. But you sound so cute when you say that." Walking up the walk, Kathy tells Eddie, "I'm going to put flower stickers on my bus. Flower power." Eddie laughs and replies, "Then, I'll really make fun of your bus." Kathy asks, "What's so funny?" Eddie replies, "That kind of reminds me when you were in high school and you pulled that prank with Mr. Crumb's beetle. You said, girls are delicate and fragile, like little flowers. Boys are rough and tough, like tree trunks. Flower stickers on the bus would make it look fragile and delicate. But your bus is far from being fragile." Kathy suggests, "Maybe I'll get Vinny to airbrush a beach scene on the sides." Eddie replies, "Now, that would be really cool." Kathy's parents come to the door. Kathy immediately asks, "So, how do you like it?" Kathy's mother asks, "Like what?" Kathy moves out of the way and replies, "My new vehicle. It's an Eddie bus." Kathy's father asks, "An Eddie bus?" Kathy replies, "Yeah. Eddie put a Porsche 930 engine and rear end in it. And most of the front end is also from a 930. Immediately excited, Kathy's parents come outside and take a closer look. Kathy's father takes a look at the engine, telling Eddie, "This must perform really well." Eddie replies, "It does. We had to do a lot of reinforcing of the framework. But it essentially handles like a sports car." Kathy's father asks, "Did someone work on this with you?" Eddie replies, "Yeah. Kurt Richter did the design work, and I put it together. It took a long time, but it came out really good. And now Bobby B. wants to build one." Kathy's mother checks out the interior of the bus, telling Kathy, "There's a lot of room inside. I wish I had one of these when you were a young girl. I could have driven you and all your friends anywhere." Kathy replies, "Yeah, I can see that." Kathy's mother asks, "Why did Eddie put a Porsche engine in it?" Kathy replies, "Because Eddie said that it wouldn't get to 60 miles an hour if Eddie, Mark, Bobby B., Braden, and Johnson were in it." Kathy's mother tells Kathy, "Well, it looks very nice. And it looks brand new." Kathy replies, "It is. And so is the engine." As they are walking inside, Kathy asks her mother, "By any chance, did you make chocolate mousse?" Kathy's mother replies, "I sure did. It's my favorite dessert now too." Kathy tells her mother, "It's my main course now." Not quite believing Kathy, her mother replies, "It is not. I'm not falling for that one." Kathy smiles and admits, "Well, it was worth a try." Over dinner, Kathy's father explains all about how the other teams in the division want the university placed in a more appropriate division, and that there's not another division that is considered more appropriate. Kathy's father then reveals, "Next year, some of the upper-level administrators are getting more deeply involved with athletics. The word has come down that some of the academic standards for sports participation will be revised. How they plan to do that remains to be seen. And there is talk about re-evaluating each university's accreditation." Wondering why the administrators would want to get involved in a university's athletic program, Kathy asks, "Why would they even care?" Kathy's father explains, "When sports teams don't do well, alumni contributions drop. That makes it difficult for the schools to offer scholarships and attract the better athletes. So, the athletic programs take a back seat. Attendance at the sporting events then drops, causing the influx of money into the athletic programs to come to a standstill." Eddie asks, "So, we have a good track team. How would that even matter to the football team?" Kathy's father explains, "At any university, if one sport excels, it brings a lot of attention to the university. That attention brings in more money in the form of alumni contributions. Prospective student athletes often assume that, if a university excels at one sport, they must be reasonably good at all sports. That becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, since the better athletes choose the best school they can for their sport. And when the radio and television stations broadcast our meets and football games, they pay for that privilege. Some of that money goes towards scholarships, allowing the university to recruit the better players. Attendance at the events goes up, and so does the income from those events. Eddie comments, "That makes a lot of sense." After dinner, dessert is served, which is gourmet cookies and chocolate mousse. With two servings of chocolate mousse on her plate, Kathy uses the gourmet cookies as a spoon, enjoying every bite. As Kathy is reaching for a second helping of chocolate mousse, Kathy's mother asks, "Did you get enough to eat? Are you still hungry?" As if nothing is unusual, Kathy replies, "As planned ahead of time, I'm eating for two. We're having a baby." Silence suddenly falls over the room for a moment, then Kathy's mother exclaims, "That's so wonderful. When did you find out?" Kathy replies, "A few days ago." Kathy's father smiles and tells Kathy and Eddie, "Congratulations. I'm so happy for you guys." Kathy's mother impatiently asks, "When's your due date?" Kathy replies, "They say September 15th, but I'm not so sure. I think it might be a little earlier." Kathy's father asks, "So, do you know if it's a boy or girl?" Kathy replies, "Not yet. I'm not sure that I want to know until the baby pops out." Eddie comments, "It's a track star." Kathy's mother asks, "Does anyone else know about this?" Kathy replies, "No. But we're headed to Eddie's parents after we leave here so we can tell them. Maybe they have chocolate mousse too." Not surprisingly, the rest of the evening's conversation centers around the baby. And now Kathy's new Volkswagen bus makes a lot more sense to her parents. After all, fitting three people into an MGB, June buggy, or Porsche 914 is quite an impossible task. But the Volkswagen bus is totally forgotten about for now. The news of the baby coming trumps all. Later that evening, Kathy and Eddie head to Eddie's parents' house, where they give Eddie's parents the good news. Next on the list to receive the news of Kathy's pregnancy is, of course, Paula. And what better place to deliver the news is there than the pizzeria? Kathy and Eddie meet Mark and Paula at the pizzeria Monday after work, which is quite unusual. Normally, their pizza time is Saturday at lunch or after a track meet if the meet happens to be on Saturday. Kathy and Eddie, already seated when Mark and Paula walk in, already know that Paula is going to quickly inquire why they are getting pizza on Monday. Kathy already has the answer to that question, which she planned in advance. As expected, Paula asks, "What's up, girl? Today's Monday." Kathy replies, "I wanted to show you my new Volkswagen bus." Paula exclaims, "Are you serious? You got a what?" Kathy replies, "I got a Volkswagen bus. Eddie put a Porsche engine in it so it will go faster." Kathy is the last person on earth that Paula would expect to see driving a Volkswagen bus. The group decides what they want for dinner, and Eddie and Mark go up to the counter and place the order. While they are waiting in line, Mark asks, "How long have you been working on the Volkswagen bus?" Eddie replies, "Kathy thought of the idea last summer, during the Olympics. I called Kurt Richter, and he said putting a 930 engine in it is doable. He drew up some plans, and I started the work when Kathy started working at the school." Mark asks, "Why did you put a Porsche engine in it?" Eddie explains, "With the stock engine, a Volkswagen bus does 0 to 60 in anywhere from 22 to 75 seconds, depending on the year and model. And its top speed isn't very good." Eddie and Mark return to the table, where Kathy and Paula are discussing work. Changing the subject, Eddie mentions, "After we eat, you guys can check out the bus." Paula asks, "What made you buy a Volkswagen bus?" Kathy replies, "Because we're having a baby. It's not like we can fit three in my Porsche, June buggy, or Edda's MGB. Talking right over Kathy, Paula exclaims, What? When did you find this out? Is it a boy, or is it a girl? When is your due date? Kathy, who always likes surprising Paula, smiles and replies, We found out last week. And we don't know if it's a boy or a girl. Paula exclaims, Wow. You're having a baby. I can't believe it. You're actually having a baby. Kathy, of course, wanted the Volkswagen bus long before she got pregnant. Just for fun, Kathy integrated the Volkswagen bus into how she announced to Paula that she is having a baby. Overhearing the conversation is Joe, who comes over to the table. Joe asks Kathy, What's this I hear? You're having a baby. Kathy replies, Aha. Sometime in September. Joe exclaims, Congratulations. You guys look very happy. Joe gives Kathy a hug, again telling her, Congratulations. Your baby is going to be the best baby. The pizza arrives, and Paula is still asking dozens of rapid-fire questions. Paula asks, What color are you going to paint the baby's room? Edda replies, It's already painted. Paula exclaims, What? You're not going to paint it especially for the baby. Kathy replies, No. The baby will be sleeping most of the time. So, it won't care what color the walls are painted. Kathy then suggests, I could hang a picture of the boogeyman on the wall. Paula exclaims, Stop it, girl. There ain't no such thing. Kathy replies, Sure there is. Every kid in the world has seen the boogeyman. Billions of kids can't be wrong, now can they? Paula exclaims, Stop it, girl. You can't be saying that stuff when you have a baby. When Paula was younger, she was very afraid of the boogeyman. Kathy certainly knows what buttons to push to rile Paula. After dinner, Mark and Paula take a look at Kathy's new Volkswagen bus. As expected, Edda and Mark look at the engine, while Kathy and Paula look at the interior. Joining Kathy and Paula inside the bus, Mark mentions, This really has a lot of room. If you take the seats out, it would make a nice work van. Edda advises Mark, If you turn a Volkswagen bus into a work van, you're really going to need the bigger engine. Meanwhile, Paula points out to Kathy that the bus can carry things like strollers. Everyone then heads home, expecting the news of Kathy's pregnancy to rapidly spread.